Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
There's Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch, who specializes in real estate, obviously. This one story, Elise, that you are talking about today, thinklink.com is the website, and you can also read her book. What was the title of your book again, Elise? Best Money Moves.
Best Money Moves is my financial wellness company. 100 questions every first-time homebuyer should ask is my book for first-time buyers.
So I was just surprised at the percentage of residents who've moved in the last year believe that this was one of the things that was important in their move. You know what I'm thinking about, right?
I do, and it's the recognition that climate change and the risk, the physical risk from climate change, is going to impact home values in their area and over the next 10 years. This is a new survey that Redfin, which is a real estate brokerage company, discount brokerage company, they did this survey in May and in June. It was conducted by Qualtrics, which does very sort of large-scale surveys. And they found that nearly half of U.S. residents who moved in the last year believe that the increasing frequency and intensity of natural disasters, extreme temperatures, and or rising sea levels will impact their area. And you know what's interesting about this, John, is we saw for the first time ever the waters around Florida. You wade into the waters the coast of Florida, it's over 100 degrees.
I've got to get and so how warm is that? Is that Luke?
It's like a hot tub. Literally, the hot
really?
Tub. A hot tub is like 104 degrees.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Because I thought, that's unpleasant. Then you're not cooling off when you go in the ocean in Florida.
No, because hopefully your body temperature is 98.6.
Yeah, really. I got an idea. Let's make me even warmer than I feel now. I'll go to the ocean. Wow. Well, we just kind of chuckled a little bit about that. And maybe it's envy. Like, you know, we're in Illinois. We're not in Florida. We're not in California. All those golden great states everybody goes to. So maybe I've been telling myself whenever I champion Chicago and Illinois, particularly as a place where the weather may actually be better. No hurricanes here. I'm kidding myself. Of course, we all want to live in Florida or Arizona, but maybe not now. I mean, maybe people are really starting to rethink that.
Well, what's happening is that it's clear that everybody's going to be impacted by climate change just in a different way. Now, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, did I think Canadian wildfire smoke was going to come across the border and make it so you couldn't go outside on a beautiful summer day in Chicago, I'd have said, no, that'll never happen here. But in reality, you know, we are also seeing climate change here in Chicago. We've got the rain. We've got, you know, coming down in crazy amounts. You know, the other day we had another big rainstorm. We've had the wildfire smoke. But that said, Chicago is seen as one of the more stable areas, you know, our state, because we do have fresh water and, you know, we don't have as much of a risk as some of these other places of having this kind of extraordinary damage due to climate change. So, you know, for us, I think we're still on the positive side of this, but I do feel for, you know, residents in other places because, you know, it's almost getting to the point, John, of saying, where do you move that you'll escape this? And the answer is nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then if you go to Canada, they've got their own issues up there. It's drier. They've got the fires. The permafrost in the northern part of Canada is starting to thaw. It's releasing more carbon and methane. And the list goes on.
Did you see that story, John, that they reinvigorated a 50,000-year-old worm from the permafrost?
Yes. Well, did you click through on that? Like,
it was crazy.
Was it, there was life then? Were they able to animate the thing?
Yes, it came back to life. They it was in a permanent state of semi, you know, whatever. I don't even know what the science, I'm not the science reporter, I just do business, but I was amazed to see that the worm was moving after like 50,000 years in stasis. It's crazy.
Almost half of us consider the value of our homes will be negatively impacted by climate change. That doesn't mean, to be clear, that half of us have moved because of concern for climate change, but that we think that our property values will be impacted by these issues, right?
Well, what it says is that half of the people who did move last year see this as being a key issue that will likely impact the value of their homes over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And they are more and more people who are moving are thinking about climate change as a reason and are planning to move, are thinking about a reason, climate change as a reason to move. While it's only that 5% of people who move say that it's because of climate change, right? So, you know, I'm afraid that my area is going to, you know, run out of water, have a wildfire, you know, drowned, I don't know. You know, that's 5%. But half of the people are actually starting to think about it. And what's more interesting to me, or as interesting, is that we're watching people move because of the housing affordability crisis. It's moving kind of opposite to this. And so Redfin also has found that people are increasing migration into less expensive areas, but these are very climate risky areas. So they're concerned about climate change, but because of the affordability crisis and the housing crisis, there's not enough housing out there. They're moving into places that are more affordable,
but still take the chance.
Could put them at risk.
But boy, good luck getting your house insured in Florida, right? That's become an issue.
Yeah, that's basically the only insurance now is the state. And technically, I mean, there's been a couple of numbers, studies that have looked at the numbers, and one or two really big hurricanes could literally knock the socks off the big Florida success story because these numbers are enormous. Last year alone, climate change physical catastrophes, cost $165 billion. We had that terrible hurricane late in the season. It was a very quiet hurricane season, and then it came slamming through Florida, starting in, I think it was the Fort Myers area, and then it kind of got stuck over Orlando, and then it moved out to the east, and it just created a massive amount of damage, and that was just one of so many things that were going on. It was the third most costly climate change disaster year in history.
Hmm. Let's talk about inflation now. Good numbers, bad numbers? What are you seeing there?
Oh, my gosh. Good news abounds in the economy, I'm so happy to say. We saw that inflation has cooled to the lowest level in 2 years. That was really exciting. We're seeing consumers continue to spend. The employment index is good. We're seeing, you know, fewer numbers of people get laid off, although the yellow trucking company is going to add to that for this coming week. We can talk about that if you like. But we're seeing very, very good numbers across the board. And the people talking about recession, the economists, everybody was so sure we were going to get a big, bad recession this year. All that talk seems to have died down. And of course, we're going to finish July with a very strong number gauge across all of the stock market indices. Looks really good, up 3% everywhere. NASDAQ up almost 4% this month.
I did not know about yellow trucking. I've heard of yellow taxi. What is this yellow trucking company?
So this is one of the biggest trucking companies in the country. It was almost 100 years old. It's Nashville-based. And what they specialized in are, if you have a company that needs sort of half a truckload, you got to marry that with another company that needs half a truckload so that you can economically truck this stuff from one place to another. So smaller cargoes, multiple companies in one trailer. And they've got 22,000 union members, truck drivers. And literally, the union wanted an increase. Yellow Trucking Company couldn't quite get there. They've been trying to negotiate. That didn't work. And finally, they're in a death spiral, and they just said, we're shutting down. And that happened last night.
I would imagine that when the supply chain got crushed, that must have hurt this company, too.
It did. They took out they got a $700 million pandemic loan, which I assume was forgiven in 2020, to keep all those people employed. Remember, because everything shut down, so we weren't nothing was being trucked, nothing was coming into the coasts, everything had shut. And when they restarted, they had two problems. One is that they had been buying up smaller trucking companies, thinking they had a deal and then they would have all this capacity. But the debt service on that was pretty high. And then, of course, you have the union asking for higher wages. Not that these weren't needed. I mean, gas prices went up like crazy amounts. People were struggling to be to do it, and there wasn't enough loads and things like that. I just think it couldn't get its act together in time to survive.
Anything you want to remind us of in terms of real estate mortgages or rentals? What's hot and what's not hot?
Yeah, well, right now what we're seeing is that interest rates are up. The Fed, of course, increased the short-term rate last week. We hope that's going to be the last one. But interest rates are now running about 7%, you know, high sixes if you've got great credit, about 7.5% if you don't. So that's causing a little bit of a problem for people looking for homes. It's just, you know, dialing back what they can afford to spend just as housing prices are creeping up. The good news for rentals, though, is that prices there are coming down. The rate of increase has declined dramatically in Chicago and elsewhere. And so I think it'll be a little bit more reasonable if you're looking to move this October.
Elise Glink, owner of ThinkLink Media, Best Money Moves. You can click on her stuff at thinklink.com, and we'll click on with you again next Monday. Thanks, Elise.
Always a pleasure, John.
727 said, I just moved in January after living in St. Petersburg, Florida for 10 years. I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania now, but most likely will move back to the Midwest. Living through the hurricanes, I'm done with this. 630, John, my prediction is in 5 years, people will be migrating into Illinois. We've got moderate summers. Winters are becoming milder. We got lots of fresh water. One more. I'm a Midwest boomerang. After graduating high school, I swore I would never live in the Midwest. I went to college out west and lived there. But I moved back last year after having my daughter and wanting to live somewhere where the climate change had a lower impact on our lives. The wildfires out west and the extreme weather is so much worse out there. Jim Dahlke is the national editor at American Inno. ChicagoInno.com is the website. Let's tell that to all the tech companies out there, huh, Jim?
Hey, John. You know, actually, we have seen that quite a bit over the few years, and that boomerang term is one that you often hear in tech circles, and it's one that local tech leaders have touted often as folks graduate from the University of Illinois, or University of Chicago, Northwestern, they head to the Bay Area, and then spend about, maybe 5-7 years out there and come back and kind of grow their families out here closer to where they grew up. And so it's definitely a phenomenon that we have seen. And I even think kind of post-COVID, we might see a little bit more of that.
Yeah, maybe so. It's first time I've heard about that, especially relative to your area. But the Bay Area is still the spot, right?
It is. And, we took a look specifically at artificial intelligence. And so Brookings recently just came out with a report, kind of really diving into some data about, hey, where are the AI jobs? So where are the artificial intelligence jobs really located? And, not a surprise, right? They are certainly clustered in the Bay Area. So looking at 2021, the Bay Area was home to about a quarter of all AI jobs just in that metro alone. Really to kind of further sort of quantify this, kind of in the first mover advantage that the Bay Area has in AI, they had about four times as many, job postings in AI at the next closest 13 cities, which Brookings identified as the next hottest cities for AI jobs. Chicago does not find itself on that list in terms of really overall the top 15 total cities, so those 13 early riser cities in the Bay Area. And so really what, Brookings is saying here is that in the U.S., we just do a better job of spreading out some of these AI jobs and allowing some of these other cities to take advantage of these high-paying important roles, especially as AI just kind of becomes a bigger centerpiece of the tech landscape, and more and more companies gravitate towards these AI tools. And so, hey, right now, the superstar cities, quote unquote, really dominate the AI space. And what Brookings says is, hey, the U.S. needs to do a better job of creating more opportunities for training AI talent elsewhere, or we're going to see some brain drain.
So it's Seattle, it's Boston. Some of these towns strike me. I'm looking at a list: Austin, Texas; Raleigh, North Carolina; as either government or university towns. Is that a common thread?
Yeah, that's a big one. Certainly those two areas specifically. And, you know, you'll see some other areas, you know, D.C., Boulder, Colorado, you know, San Diego, and then some ones that you might not expect, you know, like Lincoln, Nebraska is on this list from Brookings as kind of an early adopter city for AI, all kind of outpacing where Chicago is right now. I think Chicago certainly has the infrastructure. Chicago has, you know, the government research facilities. You look at, you know, the university landscape we have here. And I think there's certainly an opportunity for that. We're just going to have to kind of, you know, be a place for entrepreneurs to want to start AI businesses. We've definitely seen a few different initiatives around town. There are definitely people in the Chicago tech scene that are really trying to, hoping to tout, you know, the city's ability to recruit and retain AI talent, but still pretty far down the list.
Well, I suppose talent and weather are one thing, but cash is another. What's the latest on that front?
Yeah, so, you know, I had an interesting panel that one of our reporters went to. Alex Zorn was at the Chicago Tech Week the other week, and, you know, a panel that he attended really provided some interesting insight. You know, Sonia Nagar, who's a principal investor, a general partner at Pritzker Group Venture Capital, she said that really now it's kind of one of the best times ever to raise funding for a startup at the earliest stages. So, you know, those pre-seed and seed stage startup fundings, it's really, you know, there's more funds than ever that are investing directly in Chicago into that space, which is really interesting because for a long time, that had been the knock on Chicago is that it was very difficult to get that early check. And there just weren't enough funds kind of providing that very, very early funding. And so over the years, there's really been, you know, an increased effort at the venture capital level to, you know, provide those early checks. However, things get a little less rosy for Chicago startups as they grow in terms of looking for local funding. There just are not as many funding groups available to write that check at that sort of Series B, Series C, Series D level. And so that's a risk in that, right, is companies could leave Chicago. Often, yeah, you know, you'll see that a startup will take funding from a coastal investor and then, you know, move their operations to the coast. And so I think what they were talking about in this panel for Tech Week is, hey, we're doing a great job at funding at the early levels, let's continue to focus efforts there, but also make sure we're giving startups cash as they continue to grow.
How long does a company need exterior funding, you know, shy of its own sales of the product or service? How long do they need to be propped up? Series D you're talking about. It would seem to me like at some point it's logical that the company is generating its own revenue. What's the lifespan of funding for companies?
That's a great question, and it really depends on the type of business. I mean, you know, some businesses are never going to be profitable up until their exit. You know, Amazon was sort of one of the classic examples of a company that was sort of never turning a profit, and then it got to the point where it was turning a major profit. But, you know, in the tech scene, right, like you don't have to necessarily have a profit when you get to Series C, Series D level, right? These investors are looking for growth to the point where, you know, you can sort of hit this like rocket ship type growth once you get past your exit point and, you know, sell for a quite a bit of change here. So it really depends on the type of business, right? But I mean, investors, you know, traditionally are looking for about a 7 to 10 year lifespan on the return on their investment. So if you're investing in the earliest stages, you know, say you're a seed investor, a Series A investor, you're hoping about within, you know, 7 or 10 years, you're going to get a return on that investment.
I'm surprised they're that patient. I thought they were usually looking for a return more quickly. But even still, if it's 7 years or 70 years, that you're not going to put money into something that isn't viable, right?
That's exactly right. And I mean, I think you're hitting at sort of a very important piece that the tech community is grappling with overall, especially as we saw in 2021, right? The funding in tons of businesses that now flash forward 2 years, you know, many of these businesses just quite frankly are not doing very well and are having a really hard time, you know, raising that next level of funding because, you know, like many investors say, cash is king. And so, you know, all these investors want to see, you know, a path to profitability. So even if you're not, you know, profitable yet or profitable tomorrow, you know, they want to see, hey, how are you going to get there? Some investors are going to be more patient than others. But, you know, it's really one of those things where time will tell. But, you know, it depends on the type of business. You know, a lot of these AI businesses are losing a ton of money because it's very expensive to run an AI company right now. But that has not stopped investors from pouring in hundreds of millions of dollars into the space.
But pre-AI, say, or at least pre-AI investing or angel investing, we would be talking everything from biomedical companies to apps, right? I mean, it would just be the whole gamut of possible investments that money is going into, right? It, all kinds of different companies. And I guess it's kind of like Wall Street or Las Vegas. You just don't know which ones are good bets, right?
Bets is a great way to put it. I think when you're investing, especially at the earliest stages, you're placing bets. You're putting a little bit of money, getting some stake in these companies, and you really kind of only need a handful to, return, and maybe one or two to really go crazy to get some money back. And so that's really the thesis for a lot of these early stage funds is that, hey, we're going to sprinkle money around to lots of different early stage companies. We know, the vast majority of them are going to go to zero at some point.
Yeah.
But hey, all we need is a few to really make a return.
And you hope that after they do make a return, they stay profitable. Look what's happened to Cameo. Cameo would be a success story, but last week we talked about how Cameo really is kind of in a tight spot right now, right?
That's right. And a lot of these companies are, kind of a victim to timing. Cameo absolutely caught the COVID wave in 2021. They were just doing incredible business in that, end of 2020, early 2021 timeframe where people were sort of sitting on their couches and had a ton of time and, had some stimulus checks in the bank and they had a little money to spend. And then, it was an opportunity for Cameo to kind of really gain some market share. And fast forward 2 years, they've cut their staff down from almost 400 to less than 50.
Okay. You keep following that, and we'll keep tapping on you to tell us what's going on. Jim Dahlke is the national editor at American Inno. Jim, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Take a quick break with some business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The board of the Wirtz Corporation has made Danny Wirtz the chairman and president of the company following the death of his father, Rocky Wirtz. The succession was approved over the weekend. He'll take over leadership of a liquor distributorship, vintage apartment buildings, a small suburban bank, along with the Blackhawks and co-ownership of the United Center. Rocky Wirtz died last week at the age of 70. Chicago-based Cresco Labs and Columbia Care have ended a merger effort that would have created the largest cannabis company in the U.S. Crain's reports plunging stock prices and soaring borrowing costs contributed to the collapse of the deal. Cresco planned to buy Columbia Care for $2 billion in an all-stock purchase deal. When the deal was announced, Cresco was valued at roughly twice as much as Columbia Care. Cresco is now worth about three times as much. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here is Steve Alexander.
Thank you. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, except on a Monday this week, and Jim wants to talk to us about drift. No, not that kind of drift. He'll fill us in after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell, you want to talk about drift?
Yeah, and this comes because of some experience that we've had in our neighborhood this year. Weed killers, they can be dangerous to your garden. A lot of gardens are damaged by indiscriminate use of these. Hit directly or the spray can drift. Some of these herbicides are volatile, and the fumes can go a long way, maybe blocks on a gentle wind. Every year, lawns are damaged by these things, and many times flower gardens and vegetable gardens, especially tomatoes, can be damaged very badly. To avoid misuse, read the label carefully before buying and certainly before you use these materials. Follow the directions carefully. If it tells you not to do something, don't do it. If it tells you to do something, do it. Understand what the terms on the label mean or ask at the garden center where you buy these. Don't apply herbicides when the temperatures are over 80 degrees. Don't apply them when the wind is more than 10 miles an hour. And don't apply them where you know the drift is going to damage neighbors' plantings. In your lawn, do not apply non-selective weed killers, and this would be something like Roundup, to your grass because it will kill the grass too. If misused, these things can cause a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that has been a big problem in the soybean fields of Illinois with dicamba drift.
It sure has. It will drift. We had a whole planting of oak trees down in Kankakee County. I was called in because every year the leaves were curled up. It was a farmer that was down the road that was doing pre-emerge, completely innocent of it. He was mortified. He had no idea.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. On the food calendar today, it is National Avocado Day, also National Raspberry Cake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Philip Soban is from Columbia. Let's talk about this World Business Chicago pop-up store. Thanks for joining us, Philip. How are you today?
I am great, and thanks for having us.
Tell us about Columbia.
So Columbia started back in the beginning of 2020, and it is a Polish-Colombian concept. We offer different dishes like arepas. What we're really known for are the empierogies, like a mashup of empanada and pierogi. And it was pretty much made from love. So my wife is Colombian. I'm Polish. We have a lot of Polish people here in Chicago. We really wanted to represent a restaurant that doesn't really exist, especially in the heart of downtown or the West Loop. And this is something that I'm very proud of. And, of course, very proud to have my wife as my partner and spouse and, of course, have her beautiful Colombian roots. And right now we are at the Wrigley Building. So it's at 400 North Michigan. We are open here from 11 to 7 every day. And we offer delicious items like the ones I just mentioned, along with these beautiful, authentic purses that are made by indigenous women from Colombia. We have these beautiful art pieces. We also have these really nice earrings that are made from butterfly wings. And, of course, we collaborated with a lot of different local brands, one of them being Paolo Gelato. We also have hot otter sauce out of Mount Prospect, so we're able to give that really nice kick if you guys are looking for that in your food. And it's just a really nice cultural experience. You get to not only learn more about Poland and Colombia, but we also have Kyrgyzstan and we have Pakistan in the same group as well.
So this cultural exchange market features the different cultures, sometimes fusion of cultures. It's operated by World Business Chicago, the Department of Cultural Affairs, and it's open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And we've talked about it in the past. So you that are there, and is it Colombian culture that we're looking at, or is it Polish? I know your restaurant is the fusion of the two, but is it more Colombian that we're talking about, or what?
Well, that's the great part about it, is that we've had many customers that come in and they see Kyrgyzstan, they see Pakistan, and then they see Colombia. And a lot of customers, I have this question, they're like, well, forgive me if I'm ignorant, but is Colombia actually a country? I'm like, no. I'm like, it is not, but we created this concept. And, you know, when we hear that, it just brings us so much joy because it's like, well, no one else has that, right? We're the creators of Colombia. So we try to really maintain that culture. And just like our food, where it's really high end, we try to make everything in-house as much as possible. But at the same time, we also want to make that connection, right? We've met so many wonderful customers, so many wonderful people that are now our friends. Well, they're both Polish and Colombian.
When I go there, Philip, then am I going to eat or am I going to buy products, jewelry, gifts, things like that? A little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. You know, you could get your wife or daughter or a gift for your grandson. We have a Polish and Colombian scarves. We have our T-shirts, which are really popular with the Chicago logo and Colombian and Polish flags. We also have food, right? So we have a beautiful coconut cold brew made in-house. We have these kolachki that are made by the wonderful baker, Miss Grace, which is my mom. So it is a really great family business. And, of course, you could go downstairs, check out the beautiful view. We are located directly over the Chicago River. It's a gorgeous day throughout the summer. So why not grab some gelato, grab some food, buy some earrings, surprise that loved one, and have some fun.
You're good at this, Philip. Thanks for the the explanation and the enthusiasm. That's Philip Soban from Columbia. You get it now, don't you? WorldBusinessChicago.com/showcase will show you more. WorldBusinessChicago.com. And again, it's open Monday through, it's open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. I guess the landmark would be the Wrigley Building, right? Look for that.
Exactly. And, you know, if you do have problems getting in here, just try to go all the way towards the river. You'll see that door. If you're coming off of Kinsey, it's also on Kinsey there as well. We have signage. We have our flags. Come by, say hi, eat, drink, and just have a conversation with us because this is what it's all about, sharing the cultural diversity of Chicago. Thanks to World Business Chicago. And, of course, thanks to the growing communities that are here in Chicago and just around the world as well. So we encourage everyone to come out. It's a family-friendly space, and we're going to have really great activities. I'm going to be doing a cooking class with a couple different celebrity chefs. We're going to have a salsa dancing night. So it's amazing. I definitely invite and encourage everyone to come out.
Well, that is what Chicago should be all about. Philip, congratulations. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, and take care.